Blog Talk Radio.
Show today really is. You have me for a good 15, 20 minutes or so. I'm gonna run off at my yacht. Cuzzo is doing his thing, defending the country against enemies, both foreign and domestic. And sis Rashi is going to be joining us shortly. We have a guest coming on, a special guest, talking about common law domestic violence. Author Gwendolyn Wilder, and I'm trying to say that correctly, because I knew her before her name was Wilder, so in my mind it goes all the way back to Drawhorn, but that's another story for a different time. She's going to be on today to talk about common law domestic violence and just domestic violence in general. She wrote two books about it, outstanding reads. I recommend them. Folks have got there, cop the books. We got to support our folks, help them realize their dreams, and hopefully gives us some useful information to either help ourselves or other folks that we may know. And that's what's up. It's all about the cycle, and you continue the cycle. This week in the cycle, the new cycle, that is, a couple of things happened. The nuclear option was exercised, not in regards to the military or weaponry, though this was another type of weaponry. The nuclear option was exercised by the Senate to confirm Gorsuch. And look, this dude is the same guy whom voted against, well, that's not true. I'm sorry. He gave opinion against a truck driver that was broke down on the side of the road in the middle of a snowstorm. Maybe you get warm and fuzzy feelings about that. I really don't. People have changed. People do change. People's perspectives changes. We'll talk about that when we talk about the other big news story for this week. But Gorsuch comes through and he really skirted the middle of the road. He put himself in a situation where as though he didn't respond to any really tough questions because he says that he didn't want to respond to anything that he may have to judge on, which I respect that, you know. But a lot of that was evading, revealing his true thoughts. That I didn't like. I go back to, I believe it was 2 weeks ago on the show, when I praised Al Franken for really getting in his ass. Like, Al Franken really got in him. You know, he did it respectfully. He did it cleverly. You know, the dude used to be a comedian, so you're not really going to outmaneuver him too much. But his points were, you know, sir, I understand that you don't want to comment on cases that you may come across. I understand. I respect that. However, there are certain things that I feel like you can say. I feel that the American public are old for you to say, so that we have an understanding of who you are and how you may rule in cases that do come before you. And, you know, there's a degree of ridiculousness that he ascribed to in his ruling against the truck driver, specifically, that Al Franken called. I was like, man, he didn't say bullshit, but he's like, man, that was bullshit. You know, this guy called, this guy is broken down. His trailer is broken. He says, dispatch, I am broken down. What do you want me to do? They say, hey, wait for us. We'll send somebody out to you. Boom. He says, cool, no problem. He's doing what he's supposed to do. He was told what to do. He's like, all right, I'm good. So he chills out. You know, it's getting colder. It's getting colder. Snow is still coming. He's sitting there. He called back like, yo, look, what do you all want me to do? Like, I've been sitting here for a minute. I'm like, hey, we got somebody coming. Just hold tight, hold tight. He sits. He starts to fade in consciousness, potentially going through hypothermia. His cousin calls. Says, yo, you know, I haven't heard from you. He's like, man, look, I broke down, blah, blah, blah. But man, get the hell out of there. So he unhooks the trailer from the tractor. He rolls out. Then, you know, for whatever reason, he comes back around, hooks back up the tractor, and tries to roll. But his point from the giddy-up was, if I take this thing out, I hurt somebody else and or me, I don't want to be in that position. When I know that there's something wrong. And the brakes had frozen up. You know, again, it was super cold. It was mad cold. And you know, Gorsuch, he waffled on it. You know, he punted, you know, kicked the can, never really answered the question. And the Dems were like, yo, we're not doing this. We're not doing this. And I applaud them for that. You know, look, let's be real. The Democrats have been pussies. They have been pussies for a long time. And the Republicans have been lockstep, right, wrong, and different. They have been lockstep, and they've pressed on. What we're seeing right now is a fractured Republican Party, even if in the short term they are fractured right now. And it's different to watch, not difficult to watch, but different to watch, because normally you would expect that or see that on a Democratic side. And you know, look, there's some fracturing amongst the Democrats, because there's some Democrats still whom are in red states, but they are in districts that have been historically Democratic, and the people there continually vote them back in. But they have to, you know, recognize and realize that they are in a red state. So sometimes they have to go back and forth depending on what the legislation is, so on and so forth. So, hey, look, you're going to have that. But this go-around, like this Freedom Caucus, just Paul Ryan just trying to wrangle up his folks, then you have Rand Paul doing his thing, just it's ugly, man, and it's funny because we haven't seen this. And with all this crying and screaming and, you know, if we were in power, we would do, and in all honesty, they haven't done anything. So that brings up another thing. So I'm watching CNN the other day, I don't think this was live. I think this was a feed, that a replay of a feed. So this young lady has a panel, six to eight folks, I want to say, of all Trump supporters, and she's talking to them about how they feel the president's done in his first 60 days or so, and what kind of grades they would give him. So everyone gave him an A except for one guy. He gave him a B. But another guy says, look, if I had a marker right now, I would put an A-plus next to the job that Trump has done. I'm like, why would you do that? And she asked the senator, well, why? What has he done? It's like the travel ban, but it never went into effect. It was knocked down by courts out the box, the first version was, and the second version was. It didn't happen. Well, you know, he didn't know. That didn't happen either. Well, the raid, well, remember, that went horribly wrong. We lost the leading soldier in that raid, and we killed civilians, young folk, young children. Like, no, that's not a good look. Healthcare, no. Well, he tried, but the conservatives pushed against him, and I'm disappointed. Huh? He didn't try. That's why they lost the fight, because he didn't try. He didn't put any skin in that game. No skin in that game. He did not come out and make the case to the American people on national television, this is what we need to do because of X, Y, and Z, and had a real plan to execute that would take care of people. Because he comes out during the campaign and even after the campaign and says, I want health care for everybody. Everybody's going to be covered. Their health care is going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the greatest. And, you know, if you ever listen to this dude, seriously listen to him and how he formulates his thoughts and his sentences. You know, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. Trust me. Dude, doesn't he sound like a used car salesman? I mean, is it just me? It can't just be me. Can't just be me. If you want to get in the conversation today, 818-691-7348. Again, 818-691-7348. That's the call-in number for you to comment and or listen. 818-691-7348. Now, all right, so back to the news at hand. So Syria happened this week as well. So, okay, what are we doing in Syria? Nobody knows. Nikki Haley goes to the United Nations, and Nikki Haley says, well, we've done this thing, but we're prepared to do more if need be. Okay, well, what is this thing? And what more are we prepared to do? Because we launched 59 Tomahawk missiles at an air base in Syria, which the very next morning, the Syrians were taken off from the same air base to launch strikes against the rebels that we launched the attack at the air base to help curb and or prevent them from doing. So what the fuck did we just do? Two of the missiles failed. One just totally failed. And the other one had to be aborted. So we actually launched 69 missiles. I'm sorry, 69. 61 missiles, but 59 actually went on top. Now, there was this all cheer and jump up about 59 missiles, 59 hits. Then I heard a conflicting report saying that we launched 59 missiles and only 28 of them found their target. But no matter what, we told the Russians ahead of time, hey, move your people and your equipment away because we're about to shoot at you. We're about to shoot at the Syrians. Now, the Russians and the Syrians have been bet partners in this entire conflict for a little over a year now. So here I am, you know, Gorby, and I'm sitting here with my man, you know, let's just call him Ahmed. Me and Ahmed just chilling and shit. And I'm like, yo, I got a bungee. Ahmed, like, well, shit, yo, where you going? I want to go too. Like, yeah, no, you can't go on this one. Well, what do you mean? You know, we've gone everywhere else together. Why can't I go on this one? Well, not supposed to tell you, but the Americans are about to bomb this motherfucker. Oh, for real? Well, what the hell you think my man up there going to do? He going to tell all his boys, like, yo, we need to get the fuck up out of here because the Americans about to burn this joint. Duh. Hello. Makes sense to me, right? So they all got out, and they bungeed. Very little equipment was left. Very little equipment actually got hit. Bunkers, ammunition dump, yada, yada, yada. Dang shit. Airfield wasn't cratered up. Now, you're doing the strike because of an airstrike that launched chemical weapons, but you're not going after the airstrip that supports the planes that launched the chemical weapons that created the atrocity that you're trying to prevent through your strike. Yeah, that shit doesn't make sense to me either. When you figure it out, shoot it back to me. You can text me on that one. You can hit me on Twitter. You can hit me on Facebook. Don't matter. Once you got it, holler at your boy, because I'm damn sure confused. So this idiot, and I call him an idiot because he's not dumb. Let's be real. The dude isn't dumb, but he is an idiot. So he's hosting China for dinner. Now, understand something. This airstrike had absolutely nothing. Say it again. Absolutely nothing to do with Syria, the Syrians, or the use of chemical weapons. Absolutely fucking nothing to do with any of those. What was this? This was, you know that our U.S. Navy is in Japan and in Korea. North Korea is a pain in my ass. Watch what I do to Syria. Think about I can do the same at any moment if I so choose to North Korea. The difference is North Korea has nuclear weapons. Don't mean shit if we actually want to attack North Korea. We have more than enough anti-aircraft weaponry there. We have more than enough aircraft there. We have more than enough pieces of equipment in other strategic places to take out whatever nuclear weapon or weapon of mass destruction they choose to unleash. It will never make it to its target. Never, ever, 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 ever make it to its target. You have to go over Japan. You have to go over Honolulu. It's way too many assets that we have in that area in order for that to happen. It's just not going to happen. But anyhow, so here he is sitting at the table with the president of China, and, you know, he's sitting there all smug and prim and proper, like, yo, you know, by the way, I just authorized a strike on Syria, just so you know. Because, again, I said, again, a couple weeks ago on the show, the world is preparing for war. China has been building up man-made islands. They've been installing landing strips and air traffic control equipment in various locales in the Pacific Ocean. So let's understand that the world is truly preparing for war. This is not a game. When Russia did its invasion and we let that slide, now Russia is backing the Syrian-led government with the help of Iran. We let that slide. The world is preparing for war. They are. So be mindful, be very mindful of that, because it's coming in some form of fashion. It doesn't necessarily have to be doomsday, World War III. We're going to drop, you know, 600-700 nuclear weapons. Nah, I don't think it's going to be at that level. But a very strong, strong conflict is about to go down. It's imminent. It's just sitting there. It's sitting there for the right individual or the right individuals to just get flustered and say, fuck it, and push the button. And with Putin and Trump in office, do I need to say any more? Nope. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. So there we are with the Supreme Court. There we are with Syria, and the Russian allegations have still not subsided. Nunez has gone on and reclused himself. Smart decision on Nunez's part. Everybody was running and gunning for him. He didn't help himself when he ran over to the White House in the middle of the night and supposedly briefed the president on this, that, and third. That, it just didn't look good. It didn't look like he could be fair and impartial. It just didn't look good at all. Not at all. You know, and the continual digging and probing into the connections between the Trump administration, the Trump transition team, the Trump campaign, and the Russians is real. So that is ongoing and ongoing and ongoing, and who knows where that's going to go to. But the Senate feels strong about their investigation. Now the House can move forward with theirs without the distraction of Nunez always being front and center. So we'll see what we get. You know, these things usually take some time. Not going to be 3 months, 6 months. Doubt if that happens, but it may happen a year, year and a half from now. You know, there may actually be some concrete results coming out of that, because there's a lot of questions, a lot of interviews, a lot of hearings, testimonies, the press corps, raise my hand, will be all over Capitol Hill, you know, trying to get pictures and statements and this sound bite and that sound bite, and God forbid if someone has to be cross-examined or, you know, spoke out or targeted for perjury, or if someone straight up clams up and pleads the fifth, and that could drag things out even further, because then, you know, you need another witness or testimony to get better facts or just more information in general about whatever is being presented at the time. And that, again, that could add more time. Who knows? Who knows? I still say, though, this dude is not going to serve his entire 4 years. It doesn't make any sense. From a money perspective, it doesn't make any sense, because there's no money really in being the president of the United States of America. However, there is money in being the president of the United States of America, guiding your agencies or Congress to tear down this regulation, tear down this restriction, to in the areas in which you have businesses and want to grow your businesses. And then once all that is gone, then you come back as a civilian person and like, hey, we can now do this, that, and this, because I got rid of it. You know, it's really a catch-22. But that too, time will reveal. Speaking of time and time management, I'm speaking to one of my coworkers just today, and he was blowing off some steam about management and how folks have not been so good at putting forward a concrete message. We can tie that back to the White House, right? And executing upon that message. And I'm sitting back and I'm listening and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is what we get for losing accountability. And as a society, we need to stop putting folks in fear of retribution or retaliation if they're doing the right thing just because we don't like it. You know, we have a lot of folks whom have the position and the title, what have you, but they don't have true leadership qualities. And a part of being a great leader, part of being, a very large part, in my opinion, of being a good leader is being a follower. I don't have to agree with the doctrine that my company has, but I still have to follow it. I have to enforce it. I have to live and breathe that doctrine while I'm within the four walls of that structure. You dig? And I'm not so rigid as to missing the point that things happen. You know, at times you have to adjust, so on and so forth. I'm not that bad off. But at the same time, we all need to understand that there's a lot of good inconsistency, and that good really outweighs the negative, the bad side, if you will, of enforcing the rules. You know, sometimes good people get caught up in situations because they did the wrong thing, you know, and they have to be chastised just like everyone else does, and that's the right thing to do. And, you know, you give everyone an opportunity to get right, do right, and be right, but if I fucked up, then I fucked up. You know, that doesn't mean I have to be beat down because of it, but it does mean that I deserve to be chastised or corrected just like everybody else, which brings us to today's title. Again, Gwendolyn Wilder, I'm trying my best not to say her maiden name, but we got some history, so I know it before it became there. You know, it's one of them situations. Your mom, her mama named her Clay, I'm going to call her Clay. You know what I'm saying? It's one of them type joints. And but she's coming on to talk about common law, domestic violence. She's written two wonderful books. I recommend you all find them on Amazon. I recommend that you all find them at Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, wherever you shop for a book. Look up the young lady and find her and support her, because, again, it's all about the cycle, and the cycle is we help those whom help us. And as I said, it may not be for you. It could be for someone that you know, or it could be for you for later on to help someone that you know, because, you know, someone you know, no one you know, I'm sorry, may be going through it right now, but who only knows what tomorrow brings? Who only knows what tomorrow brings? And she's on now, so I'm going to bring her up now. Good morning, Gwen. How are you?
Good morning, my friend. I'm awesome. And, yeah, you're right. I'm Clay. Just call me Clay.
You know what I'm saying? Cause, you know, I mean, every time I say your name, it's like, no, Wilder. Like, that's tough. It's tough. You know, it's like me changing my name. You're like, man, that's Lee. You know what I'm saying?
That's all I know.
Right. That's all I know. That's all I know. So, I reached out to you to come on to talk about your story, because it's okay to share your story.
That's shameless plug.
And I really wanted to get into this. Now, I didn't really know what I was getting into until we agreed to make this happen. And the research department got to me, and they was like, you really want to talk about this? And I was like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, well, here you go. And I'm reading the notes, and I'm like, ooh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Motherfuckers still do that? Like, really? You know, so First off, please, I'm going to step out. I'm going to let you step in. Introduce yourself. What's up?
Okay. Well, you know, and again, thank you so much because, you know, we had this conversation that, well, basically we were just saying, you know, we basically have to take care of each other. And that's exactly, you know, what this book is all about. And so that's why I love that you brought me onto the show. And so I think probably the best thing to do is just kind of give a little bit of background about who I am, because that's really important as far as why I wrote the book and why the book is so intense. So in a very short space, I'm retired Air Force. I did 21 years in the Air Force, and that's how, you know, I had the opportunity to meet Lee, because we were, you know, stationed together at my first duty station, which was awesome and kick-ass. I love that base. But after that...
You age?
I know! Sky King! What? Come on now. Gotta represent. Gotta represent. So when I was in the Air Force, though, the job that I really enjoyed the most was being an Equal Opportunity and Alternate Dispute Resolution Program Director. And I loved that job so much that I decided to start a small business doing that. And that business took off. And so in between that time, I gathered, you know, several degrees, and I became a behavioral therapist, and I was helping people with investigating sexual harassment and dealing with sexual assault issues and dealing with counseling with Child Protective Service families. And it was great. But, you know, and I gained a contract, a government contract, probably like within my first 6 months of being in business. And that contract was worth about $5 million. So on the outside, my life was looking great. It was really phenomenal. Things were going wonderful. But what people didn't realize is that behind the scenes, I was living day to day in just hot-ass drama. I like to call it my hot-ass mess because, you know, I was being a hypocrite. I was basically trying to help and encourage my clients, but I was struggling every single day just to try to keep it together. And what people didn't understand was domestic violence. You know, yeah, you get abused by the perpetrator, but you also have this inner turmoil and torture that as the victim that you put on yourself because you're so bound by guilt and shame and you want to just keep everything hidden. I'm here to tell people that you don't have to live in that guilt and that shame. That you don't have to be embarrassed because it wasn't your fault what happened to you, but you can take control of your life and you can leave a really awesome kick-ass life and you can survive that hot-ass mess, which is domestic violence. And so I lived 8 years dealing with domestic violence. And when I'm telling you what domestic violence is, a lot of times people go, well, isn't domestic violence just somebody hitting somebody? Like, you know, how does that work? Like, how are you possibly a victim of domestic violence? Because you seem like you really have yourself together. And so that's why I decided to write this book, because I wanted people to know what domestic violence really entails, what are some things that you can do, and really understand that it's not your fault and it's really okay to tell your story and you don't have to live in shame. So that's it in a nutshell. But, you know, I can get real deep right now on this.
And please, I'm going to take you there, but why the fine ones always get you? Look, we keep it real here, so I'm going to say it to you like I want to say it to you. Why the fine ones always getting their asses whipped? I don't understand. What the hell is going on?
You know what?
I don't get it.
It's true. You know what? I talk about this in the book. I promise you I do, because it's like a heat-seeking missile that these people, that these perpetrators, they have this ability to target people that have low self-esteem. And even though you can be, like, really awesome at whatever your professional life is, if you have something that you're struggling with, maybe you're already, you know, a single mom or a single dad, whatever the case may be, because, again, domestic violence doesn't discriminate. You could be a man, and I talk about that in the book as well, how men are victims of domestic violence. But, you know, if you're dealing with low self-confidence and low self-esteem, they see that. And then they want to come in and be that, you know, quote-unquote white knight, and they want to save you. And that's what they do. They try to build you up. It's like a honeymoon stage on crack, you know, on like super speed. And they try to build you up only. But what you don't understand as a victim is that they're molding you. And basically they're trying to build you up so that way they know what your weaknesses are so they can tear you down later. That's how that happens. That's how that gets down.
All right. So you met a guy. It was a guy, right? I'm just saying, because, you know, you never know these days.
Yeah.
But you met a guy, And you all were together for how long?
So we were together for 8 years. And, you know, one thing that I tell people about, now keep in mind, I didn't even realize that I was considered to be married until the final incident that happened and the police, you know, told me that this is what happened and this is, you know, what it is. I was shocked. I mean, I was absolutely floored, but I'll tell you that in a second. So essentially, we were together for 8 years. And during the 8 years, I'm not saying, you know, every single day that I woke up, he was beating on me or, you know, there was some type of verbal abuse. It started off pretty okay in the beginning, just like any other relationship. You have that, you know, that warm, fuzzy everything and everybody's in love space. But probably about 6 months after it started, that's where everything, you know, went awry. And for those people that aren't familiar with the military, they have this system where, you know, you have to have a fitness test. And so whenever I would have my PT test, you get weighed, right? And I remember this distinctly because I hate PT tests. You know, I hated them. And so I remember distinctly getting weighed, and I weighed exactly 136 pounds that day. And my abuser, he told me I was fat. He said I was too fat. And that's why that was the excuse that he gave me for why he was cheating on me and why he was calling me tons of names. And that's when the verbal abuse started and the emotional abuse, which falls under psychological domestic violence. And so it started off small. And this is why I tell people, you know, you're not going to have an abuser just wakes up one day and then just start smacking you around. It's going to start off and, you know, has a hierarchy. It starts off with that verbal abuse and that emotional abuse, and then it escalates into the physical abuse or sexual abuse or financial abuse. And so that's one thing I really want people to understand. It doesn't matter if you're with a boyfriend, girlfriend, if you're in same-sex relationships, any threatening behavior between any intimate partner that's violent or abusive, whether it's psychological, financial, sexual, physical, all of that shit, that is definitely domestic violence. And a lot of people dismiss it as...
Hold on. Please, because you just got me all fucked up in the head. Because I'm standing here, and I remember you kind of tall, and I remember you were, you know, thin frame. But you got some things, and I'm trying to figure out how with them things you were 136 pounds, like, and I don't get it, because they had to be about 40 apiece.
You silly.
So they 40 apiece. You 136 pounds, and he's talking about you fat. I don't know what the hell he was looking at. He needs some glasses or something.
And that was my life. I'm trying to tell you right now, that was my life, and it was bananas, you know, because I'm trying to understand what are you talking about? But, you know, honestly, all it is, there's a term that I talk about in the book when I talk about the warning signs, and one of them is called gaslighting. And gaslighting is it's a form of emotional abuse. And this is when the perpetrator or the abuser, they make the victim second guess themselves or question their own feelings, you know, their own sanity, you know, about stuff. And that's what he was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he was making me doubt myself and question myself, like, am I fat? Because the Air Force says I'm cool. You know, I only weigh 136.
Right.
And, like, you know what I'm saying? And most of that is, top heavy. So, like, I'm pretty sure I'm not fat. You know, but that's what they do. You know, they make you really second guess yourself. And so I didn't understand that straight away because, again, it's very subtle. And it's one of those things where if you don't understand what the evil is, which is domestic violence, you're not going to see it. You're just going to think, oh, he's just an ass. You know, he's just doing that just because. But actually what was really happening was he was grooming me to decrease my self-esteem. Now, keep in mind, no one can tell you how you think about yourself. They can try and manipulate you, but you control yourself, your actions, your thoughts, right? But when you are being manipulated by, you know, someone, a perpetrator or an abuser, and you love that person, you're going to believe what they're telling you because you want to sustain that love and you want to keep them happy and you want everything to be cool. But, you know, that's not love. You know, that definitely is not love. And so that's the key, I think, is just being able to, you know, identify some of those warning signs like gaslighting and, you know, but anyway, I forget how we even got back on that part, but I think I was telling you, you were asking me, huh?
You're fine.
Oh, okay. So, but I think you were asking me, how did it all go down, I think. So, yeah, we were in this thing for 8 years, and then it just escalated over time. It would start with, like I said, verbal abuse and emotional abuse, and then it would be like, you know, a push, or, you know, like you're joking as you're pushing, or you're joking as you're hitting me, or maybe he was serious, you know, he was dissatisfied with something. And I'll give you a prime example. We used to have these wood floors in a house that we shared, and I can never clean those floors, those damn floors, the way that he wanted. It just would never be perfect, no matter how well I did it. I'd be on my hands and knees trying to clean it, and I just couldn't get that shit right. And I'm like, how in the hell can I manage, like, multi-million-dollar contracts, but I can't clean a damn floor? Like, what the hell? Like, I've been cleaning floors for, like, upteen years up until that point. Like, why is this not working right now? And so he would basically, you know, dehumanize me. And he's like, how can you be so smart and be so dumb at the same time? Like, how is it possible for you not to understand the simple directions of how to clean the floor, that kind of thing? And I would second guess myself. I'm like, damn, is it really? Am I really, you know, am I really doing this right now? Like, I'm not understanding.
Okay,
crazy.
Okay, so, all right. Did he have mama issues?
So
in your estimation?
This is definitely, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is that I am a firm believer, and, you know, I've done research. I went back to school so I could learn about domestic violence. That's how dedicated I was to this book. That's, you know, a part of this whole process for me was I didn't want to just tell my story. I wanted to give you some facts and information. This is why I tell people domestic violence is directly related to childhood experiences and childhood relationships. And this particular person, my abuser, and I'm not saying it's the case in every single situation, but in my situation, there was abuse. It was childhood abuse. And so if you don't properly deal with that and the relationships that you have with whatever that relationship is, whether it's existing or not existing with your parents, that is going to have an impact on how you interact as an adult, whether you're in intimate relationships or friendships or coworker relationships. It will impact all of those. And I saw that. The way that he would treat, you know, coworkers, the way that he would treat me, they were all different. You know, he was able to segment those. And I truly believe that because of things that he told me, and again, there's no way for me to confirm or deny this, but all I can take is what he said, that he experienced sexual abuse as a child. So, you know, I think that all of that comes back into play of them trying to have control. And for them to have control over their life means controlling someone else's. That's what it's all about. If you don't remember, you know, if people don't remember anything else I say today, just remember that domestic violence is just about having power and control. That's truly what it is, and that's what it was.
I'm trying to get Rashi in because she's on with the. Good morning,
hello,
sis. How are
hello.
You?
Good morning. Good morning, Miss Wilder. Good morning, Lee. Oh, I've been here riveted. Your conversation, You have explained so much that is at the root of this. I'm sorry I'm a little tardy to the party, but I have been listening now for the last 15 minutes, and your last statement is probably the most eloquent, powerful, you know, statement that it plays out in so many relationships. It's not that there's an abusive person. It's that people do abusive things, and you have to be able to recognize when you've turned the tide as far as how you're interacting with another person. And I think that power issue you spoke on, Ms. Wilder, is so prevalent in everyday, just at the grocery store. I mean, people think, no, you're talking about a 10-year marriage. No. You're talking about a relationship between you and the cashier at the grocery store. You hand them the money, they throw your money down on the counter. It's that same amount of power and disrespect that people play out in conversations, just basic conversations. And And those microaggressions turn into macroaggressions, and eventually you have to decide how much you're going to take. Are you going to mirror that? Are you going to, you know, fight against the chaos? Because those people are not very happy people. But thank you so much. Thank you so much. Now, I did have an actual question for you. I have found that it's not always energy put into an aggression. I have found that a lot of people suffer from neglect or abandonment type power control issues. As in, I'm not in your face calling you fat or punching your arm. I literally just don't speak to you. I look at you and walk past you. I walk past you, I look at you, but I don't acknowledge your actual existence.
Mm-hmm.
I used to call you, now I no longer call you. I used to ask your opinion on something that's definitely going to take both of our, you know, critical analysis. Now, I don't give a damn what you think. And that I think is more, it's seen and felt more than, believe it or not, that I'm going to punch you in the face if you don't do exactly what I asked you to do type.
You know what? I love the fact that you brought this up, because in the book, this is a part of the psychological abuse and specifically emotional abuse. And that's why I give an example in the book of what I call the heartless hug. And so what my abuser used to do is...
It's called the what?
The heartless hug. The heartless hug.
Hug.
Like,
so is that like a church hug? Is that like a church hug when you stick the booty out because you ain't trying to get all close?
No.
I just wanted to say booty sometime in the conversation. That's all.
Well, it definitely is not that. The heartless hug, as I call it, that was, he did just that. He would go days, and I'm talking days, not 2 days. He would go sometimes 3-4 days and not even speak to me. We'd be in the same house, and he would not have a conversation with me. But the heartless hug is when I would beg for some type of attention, whether it was a kiss, a hug, an eye glance, or something. And when he finally did hug me, it would be on the side, like we would be side to side. It would be, he would put his hand around me, but there would be no tension, no squeeze, and that's what I called the heartless hug, because it was emotional.
Oh, okay.
You get a better hug from a stranger than what I received with the heartless hug, and so that's an example of what she was just talking about, because, you know, psychological abuse, I don't want to say one is worse than the other, but My personal experience, psychological abuse was far worse, because people could see the physical, the injuries that he left on my body. You could see those. But the psychological part, that mind trip, nobody could see that.
Mm-hmm. All right, can we get to that for a bit?
Hold on, please, Lee. I'd like to say one more thing to
By
that
all
point.
Means. By all means.
Please. And Miss Gwen, please, can I call you Miss Gwen?
You can just call me Gwen, girl. We good?
I'm sorry. I was raised by my grandma. Was raised from the grave and slapped me in the mouth. Anyway, what I'd like for you to speak more about is that behavior that you engage in order to elicit any kind of response. Some of it is healthy. Some of it becomes unhealthy. I have seen individuals start doing that particular person's drug of choice, simply because it was the only way that they could get interaction out of that individual, even when they were in that, what I call the frozen state, which you call the heartless.
Did you read my book? I think you read my book already, because I did that. I think you truly have read this book.
I've actually never heard or met. I am so sorry, but I intend to do the research.
Hold on, stop the presses. Stop the presses. What did you do, Gwen?
Okay, so
Lee, you know me for
a hot minute. I was straight and as straight as could be. Now, don't get me wrong, I got my drink on. I did that. But
oh yeah, I know that.
When I was Yeah, but when I was with this, you know, I like to refer to him as Crazy. So when I was with Crazy, because I don't give his name power, right? So I just refer to him as Crazy. So when I was with
Girl, get to the point. Crazy, what you do?
Yeah, I smoked weed, you know, because that was the only way that I could get to him, I could get him to spend time with me. And so the only way that I could get him to somehow, you know, release some of that tension to where, you know, we'd have a conversation, even if the conversation was about ridiculousness, you know, that's the only way I could get him to show me some type of attention, because I was thirsting. I was thirsting for any type of attention that says you love me, even if it was just arguing with me or saying he didn't like the meal that I cooked or whatever it was. You know, you and weed was that gateway, because he was a straight up, like, no kidding, he did everything. And
he was a cannabis connoisseur. Huh?
You know, and I'm not, hey, everybody's got their vices, you know, but for me, that was not, you have to understand, that was, I never did that. That was just wasn't something I wanted to do. I'm not saying, you know, tell people don't do it. I'm just saying that just wasn't for me. But I did it because that was the only way I felt I could get attention and get love from him. And then it turned against me. But here's the bad part. It turned against me because then he would purposely give me like a billion dose, you know, of a blunt so that way I could fall asleep. So that way he could go out and cheat because I'd fall asleep and then he'd go do what he do. So it turned against me. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think that when you're a victim, you're not in your right frame of mind to understand that you're being manipulated like that. That's the key.
Right. Ms. Gordon,
okay,
hold on. You had no intention of having sex with it, it'll make you kill. I've heard somebody engaging in robbery because their man was up in the stick-em-up game, so they pulled off in the car with him. They engaged they found girls for him to impregnate because there was something wrong with her reproductive system. So she went out and found women for her man to impregnate. Just all manner of twisted behavior simply because without it, you don't get the attention that you seek so badly.
Y'all are not going to shut me out. This is not a menage a quatre. Y'all is not going to shut me the hell out. I got questions. I got statistics. I got facts. I am still in the room.
The man is still in the room. Pay attention.
See me. I feel like I've been neglected.
Lee, I want to tell you something. Lee, I was just talking to a young gentleman about how much power male attention yields, because men are kind of programmed to assume that their attention is a little benign, like fathers leave and they kind of feel like, oh, she's going to be all right, you know, her and them kids going to be all right. And I try to tell men all the time, even just their voice is so important that it makes women paint their lips red. It makes us
well, I'm mad.
And squeeze our woman.
I'm mad. Y'all ass is going to hear me roar. Now, check it out. 1 in 4 women experience domestic violence in their lifetime. I did not know that. Now, I'm always shocked and amazed at how many women, after I've talked to them for quite some time, they feel comfortable around me. And I don't know why the hell women feel comfortable around me, but they do.
More than that,
reveal to me in some form of... revealed to me
that,
in some form of fashion. Huh?
It's more than that if you count emotional abuse, psychological abuse. It's more than that.
Okay. I have been victims of sexual assault. That always amazes me because there's nothing in me that says I deserve anything of any female that much that I can take it. There's nothing in me that says that, so I've never understood that. But that's neither here nor there. Domestic violence is the third leading cause of homelessness amongst families. And the source I pulled this from was Safe Horizon Domestic Violence Stats and Statistics and Facts. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know what? And listen, Lee, I want to say, since you brought up the thing about homelessness, this is exactly why I did the I got the sponsor. I got amazing sponsors to help me with my book launch party that I had last week, actually, last Thursday. And these sponsors, they were Avon, Mary Kay, European Wax Center, Caprice Productions. They raised $20,000 so that way I can give it to the domestic violence shelter that I use personally. But here's the thing. People don't understand. There's not enough space. There is not enough space. We don't have everybody. Okay, not everyone has the money to pick up and leave and go somewhere so that way they can feel safe. And that's why there's a statistic that says there's about 7 tries a victim is going to attempt before they actually leave their abuser. And when they finally do leave, oh, my God, they need to have that support system. And sometimes that support system, the only support system they have is that shelter because of their friends and families are so and when I say ignorant, I don't mean it in a bad way, but they're just ignorant. They're not aware of what the violence is, so they're not able to assist you with the appropriate resources, to help you get out. And there are, specifically here in Texas, because that's where I live and so that's what I focus on, but just in one single day, these are the statistics I gave last week at my book launch party, but just in one single day, there's about 1,500 requests for services. But these services go unmet because there's a lack of housing space. And don't get me wrong, the shelter is fantastic. They're really phenomenal. But there's so many people experiencing domestic violence that they just don't have the resources to assist them. I mean, you got the National Domestic Violence Hotline. They receive anywhere from, 624 calls a day. You know, and forget about the chat services. That shit's like bananas. You get like 1,000 chat services, you know, where people are asking for advice and calls. And this is why I put this stuff in the book because, true story, when I went through my situation, one of my friends, someone that I thought was a good friend of mine, which we no longer communicate, she asked me, when I told her that he tried to choke me to death, she said, well, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? What you say? And I almost choked to death because I was drinking something at the time. And I was like, what did you say? And she's like, girl, that's nothing. You know, my husband, you know, he did that to me before. You know what? I don't give a shit what you went through. I'm talking about me right now. And I'm telling you that this is what happened, okay, and that I need your help. But what I had to understand later that I didn't understand then is that because some people are going through domestic violence themselves and they're not able to comprehend that that's what that is, they can't put a label on it, they don't understand that's inappropriate and that it's a violation of the law and that you deserve better respect and treatment. And so they don't know that it's not okay for that to happen. And that's what ended up happening. You know, I ended up just like not talking to her anymore because I was like, I'm coming to you for help and you're telling me it was my fault because I, you know, called him out on cheating for like the 18th time. No. I was like,
Ms. Gwynn, we were speaking on homelessness, and you were saying that most people are ignorant of the situation. And then I think it's important for people to hear that not only are they ignorant, as in they don't know, but you're also saying that they know, and they're in it, and they don't know exactly how to express that they are also in it. So you're going to find a spectrum of reasons why this abuse to homelessness pipeline exists. And it goes from, you know, not knowing at all that something was going down, and then, oh, I knew, but, you know, it's going down with me. And the third, I knew, and I'm tired. I'm tired of you and him going back and forth and back and forth, and I'm not feeding into that bullshit anymore. And you said them 7 tries. Most people bow out on you after the third try.
You know what? And this is exactly why there's a chapter in the book that I talk, and it's the friends and family's do's and don'ts checklist, right? Because again, I've had people, and don't get me wrong, over the course of my 8-year stint with this person, I went to my girlfriends, I went to my family, bitching and complaining, and you're right. Some people, they were like, you know what, either you leave or shut the hell up, right? You want to be there. You must want this to happen to you because you're there, is what one person said. And I couldn't understand it because here's the thing. Even though, you know, I consider myself to be a pretty accomplished person. You know, I got like 3 degrees and a shitload of certifications. But when your mind gets hijacked as a victim, you lose all like awareness and comprehension of what's happening around you and to you. And so what I tried to express the best way that I could was, I need help. I don't want this to happen anymore. But I didn't know. I was embarrassed to even tell people that I was getting, you know, physically abused. It was hard. And then the financial part, people couldn't understand that. Because remember, I had just gotten awarded this $5 million contract, and we had just started processing the contract. Well, he couldn't stand that. And so abusers, this happens to abusers. You know, he couldn't stand the fact that he worked for me as an independent contractor, and then I was the breadwinner. I was bringing everything in. I was taking care of stuff, and I was living my life. I was, you know, traveling on business meetings, and, you know, I was getting treated to, like, you know, front row seats at basketball games and that kind of stuff, right? So, you know, life was starting to really propel for me. And I know that that's something that he really didn't like. And so he costed me this one client, and that was about $200,000. And that's kind of when I was like, what the hell just happened just now? Because he just didn't want to be right and do the work that he needed to do. And at one point, if you can possibly imagine this, I'm the CEO, 100% owner of my business. I was paying him more as an independent contractor than I was making myself, which is bananas. Mm-hmm. People are like, you make more money. How can you financially be abused by this person? Because he was manipulating
me.
Okay. Uh-huh, go ahead.
Wow.
Here's my question. Here's my question that the fellow's going to ask me either now or later. Was the dick that good? I mean, what else was it that kept it together?
We weren't even having sex. We would go at least.
Really?
I would say, yes, there would be times where we would go about a year, maybe. One time it was almost a year and a half. We were not having sex. And I attributed that to alcohol abuse and the drug abuse because, again, he was doing more than just weed. He was doing cocaine and all different types of stuff. So I contribute all – but, see, I didn't understand that because his sexual dysfunction, he was blaming that on me being fat or, you know, me wearing too much makeup, which, again, was another mind fuck because, you know, he didn't want me to look a certain way. You see what I'm saying? Because I look good. I say that now because I know I own my sexy today. But
yeah,
then,
yeah, you are.
You know what I'm saying?
You
but
know what,
then,
Miss Gwen? Miss Gwen, I find there's another layer, and that is, they know how fucked up they are.
Yeah.
So they need
hold on.
They desperately, desperately need you to do something, anything wrong.
Right.
If I leave, if I don't touch you for 6 months, if you don't cheat on me after a year. You psychotic. You understand? After a year of emotional and psychological denial, man, go on with that. That's what you wanted me to do.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, here's how, because Lee asked the question, like, you know, in a roundabout way, like, basically, why did I stay so long? Here's the thing. In the domestic violence process, it's a cycle. It's like a circle. You know, in the middle, you have the victim who is in constant denial, and they are really hoping and praying that they can make that relationship work because they're so intently in love with that, the vision of what that relationship could be like, not what it is, but the possibility, that lie that they told them in the beginning of what they can promise them of what the relationship could be. But what's happening on the outside of that circle is you have whatever the experience is. So that person hit you, called you a name, withheld something, whatever it was, and then they come back and then they apologize. And in my case, I would get flowers or, you know, he would cook a dinner. You know, somehow he would try to apologize for that action. But then it floats right on back to that hot-ass mess stage of, you know, he does something else. And it would be this continuous circle. So, and that's how you stay in a relationship for such a long time because they try to smooth that stuff over and then you, you know, forget about it for like a week and then shit happens again. because you didn't do something right. You put too much salt on the chicken. And then you get in the argument.
Too much salt on the chicken.
Too much salt on the chicken, please.
You trying to kill him. Give him hypertension.
You know,
all right,
so.
I'm sorry.
I need to finish with my facts now. 2 million injuries and 1,300 deaths per year are contributed to domestic violence. 3 women are murdered every day by intimate partner. Now, that's something that before I was stationed in Alabama, I would have never understood, thought, or believed. After I was stationed in Alabama, I fully understood it. Because there was a rude awakening in my life when I got stationed in Alabama. I'm sitting in my office listening to the radio, and I promise you, the first 6 months or so, every morning, either driving into work or sitting in the office before class got started, while class was going on, there was some murder-suicide, some dude that killed his girl and then killed himself. Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there as this northerner with no point of reference for any shit like that, because nobody I know, nobody I ever heard of did some shit like that. And I'm like, yo, what the hell is wrong with y'all down here? You know what I'm saying? And it's not laughable to be ignorant or cruel. It's just laughable because, honestly, I had never encountered anything like that before, and I was really dumbfounded. I was like, yo, what the hell? As you said, Rashi, I'm like, yo, what the hell is in the water down here? Like, is something y'all eating that I need not eat? Like, something is going on, and I ain't trying to get caught up in that shit because, again, for me, there's no reason to kill my woman. And it damn sure ain't no reason, if I find a reason to kill her, to kill myself. I mean, I just don't get that at all. You know, so, but, hey, folks in the age group of 18 to 34 are at greater risk. That really jumped out to me because, as we've discussed many times on the show, Rashi, you know, young folks don't have those communication skills. They really don't. They don't.
All this
texting shit is not helpful. And you add upon that emotions that most men are not conditioned or trained to handle. I'm sorry, most males are not conditioned or trained to handle when they're young. It really does take years and or a very good woman that's patient as hell to work with you and get you to where you need to be. I'm just being honest. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you for acknowledging.
I'm totally being honest.
Miss Gwen. Lee and I are proposing, and I'm working a little harder on seeing how that's going to work in application. We're proposing that conflict resolution classes be added to the curriculum of as many social studies or civics classes, maybe even economics as possible, so that people have because I honestly don't know where they would get the information on how to talk to somebody and not escalate. How to see when somebody is being irrational and say, well, your logic is faulty when you said that I was fat, because according to the body mass index right here, I'm this tall and this. You understand? You can fight illogical domestic power related arguments with conflict resolution type. You know, if you're gonna do it. Do it like this. You don't sit there and let somebody do that. You say this to them. I'm not about to let you feed into this. And
okay,
as far
so
as,
I'm gonna share this. I don't think you had came on or you came on after I said this. So my background is in conflict resolution. And my abuser so when I was in the military, my job was equal opportunity and also dispute resolution program director. And I'm not, and believe me, I'm like one of the most humble people that you could possibly meet, but, and I'm not trying to brag, but, you know, I won, huge awards because I was very successful at completing mediations between difficult parties. But I couldn't mediate shit in my own life. And I just think that my abusers, you know, when I would try to use my conflict resolution techniques, he would tell me, quote, unquote, don't give me that psychological bullshit. That's what he would say. And here's the thing. You are in a conflict resolution type setting, you're there, both parties are agreeing to be there and abide by the rules and the strategies that are going to be implemented. You cannot negotiate with an insane asshole. It just doesn't work. And so the only thing that you can do is control yourself and your actions. And once you realize that you can't have a sane conversation with this person, you got to cut ties and get out. And that's what I tell people. Like, you know, yes, I'm not an advocate for breaking people up and divorce and all of that. No, 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 no. If you think, because I don't think every single incident is, because sometimes people just have a bad day. And if they curse you out and they call you, you know, whatever disparaging term, maybe they just had a really bad day and they got all this other kind of stuff going on. And maybe you can talk through it and then move past it. But if you know for sure 100% this is some type of domestic violence, their process, their logic, their cognitive thinking is just gone. You're not going to be able to negotiate with that person. The only thing you can do is save yourself and get out. And that's what I tell people.
What is the statistic? Do you have one for domestic violence and substance abuse?
No, I didn't go into that.
I would bet that the correlation, and even I felt, I hate to say it, causation of some of those cases have something to do with addictive behavior, Ms. Gwen. Addictive behavior.
Yeah. I can tell you when I was practicing as a behavioral therapist, I worked with child protective service families, and my main goal was working with people dealing with substance abuse. And then it just happened that God decided to put me with people that were dealing with substance abuse and domestic violence. And this is why I said this journey, this movement, this is God. This is not me, because, you know, it took me 3 years of recovery. I mean, you still have those days where, you know, I would hear a motorcycle and I jump into a panic attack. You see what I'm saying? So it's not like you are healed and life is great and you move on. That shit haunts you still, especially like in my case, I still have scars. So, you know, you see that shit every day and it's like, okay, but now I don't see it and I'm ashamed. I'm like, okay, you know what? I survived that because it could have been worse than what it was. But the whole reason I say that is to say, there is a direct correlation between substance abuse. If you have any type of mental issues combined with substance abuse and you already have low self-esteem about yourself and control issues, yeah, it's just going to heighten that whole domestic violence situation. That's all that is. It's just compounding it. I don't know what the statistics are, but, yeah, definitely. I see a correlation. So
okay.
One thing I really want to say.
No, go ahead. Finish your point, and then I'll get mine in.
One thing, because I definitely want people to understand, because remember the title of the book is Surviving Common Law Domestic Violence, and I really want people to understand that there's a difference between common law and traditional marriage, because, again, I didn't realize I was considered to be married until the day that I almost died, right? The police told me this. And so I really want to share that story and let people know you have to figure out if you're living with someone as a partner, figure out if your state has common law marriage, okay? Because a lot of people have a misconception that if you just live with someone for a certain period of time that you automatically are married, or if you do certain things, you're automatically considered married. It's different for every state. Here in Texas, you have to agree to be married, represent yourself as being married, and then live together, a husband and wife. And so in my particular situation, how that looked was, you know, over the course of time, we refer to each other as husband and wife, or this is my spouse or my better half or something like that, right? And then we signed a lease agreement and a furniture. We bought furniture together. So that was the legal documents there that represented. And then, of course, we lived together as husband and wife. Well, when everything went down and I called the police after I went through the incident when he was choking me to death, he told the police, oh, yeah, we're married, and, you know, this is just a fight, whatever, whatever. And I was like, what are you talking about? We're not married. And then the police, that's how I realized. They told me what the requirements were for Texas, and that's how it turned into this domestic violence thing, or it was common law. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what? This is crazy. So I actually had to go through a divorce process, and that's what I want people to be aware of, is that there's divorce processes that you need to go through as well if you're considered to be common law. And through that process, that's when he was telling me. Now, remember, I owned my business 100%, started it myself. He was just an employee of mine. Well, because we were considered common law married, he would have access to everything, the house, the car, the business, all of that. And that was part of the reason why I ended up closing my business. But, you know, that turned out to be a good thing because I wrote this book, because it put me in a new direction to write this book. But, you know, people need to be aware of that. They could, you know, go after your retirement, pensions, 401ks, all that stuff.
Well, let's help them out. So common law marriage states are Alabama, Colorado. This is not a state. I repeat again, this is not a state. The District of Columbia, because these fools think D.C. is actually a damn state. Georgia, if created before 1197, Idaho, if created before 1196, Iowa, Kansas, Montana, New Hampshire, for inheritance purposes only, Ohio, if created before 101091, Oklahoma, if created before 11198, Pennsylvania, if created before 11 2005, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Texas, and Utah. So for the majority of these, if you notice, the majority of them are either in the South or in the Midwest.
Right.
We folks up north usually have better sense. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? Yeah, I did. So we don't do that stupid shit. But anyhow.
That's what it is. And I was like, what the hell is this?
The law actually dates back further than that, and if you all will allow me, I will shut y'all asses down. Let me get into what I need to get into, because this was some very interesting shit. So in 1800 BC, the Code of Hammurabi states that a wife is subservient to her husband. A man can punish any member of his household for any reason. Roman Code of Paterfamilias states, if you find your wife cheating, you can kill her ass on the spot without trial. Mm. But if she finds you cheating, she cannot touch you. Death could also be brought to a spouse for walking outside without her face being covered or attending a public event without permission. Boy, I wish I would tell Keisha as she can't go hang out. You went to the Mary J. Blige concert. You didn't ask me. Oh, I'm about to fuck you up.
And
let's see that. Both of y'all talking and nobody here. Damn, they neither one of y'all said. See that?
Oh,
now, what
ahead,
did you say, Rashi?
I said you went to the Mary J. Blige concert and your face wasn't beat because the face of your face had to be covered. Never mind.
Oh, God. I can't.
Gwen, what did you say?
I was just saying if that happened, that would be a whole other – this would be a whole other show. It would just be me and Rashid talking about – yeah. It would just be different. Mm. It would be funny.
Medieval canon. Medieval canon.
All of those are
I'm not done.
Power and control.
I will control the mute button on this motherfucker. The medieval canon states wifely disobedience was punishable publicly with an iron muzzle that had spikes to depress the tongue. Because, you know, some of y'all say some shit out y'all mouths that need to be depressed. Things started to change. In Renaissance France, they made a move to be more progressive and protect women because too many women were being killed by their husbands and their economic contributions were being lost. So they came up with the idea of if you were to strike your wife, then you need to strike her upon her back so as to not leave a mark. But added that a man who isn't the master of his wife isn't worthy of being a man. This is the shit that you all have to deal with via us, but this is the shit that we've been taught our entire lives. This is not going to be easy just to crust over. We can learn better. Most of us have been taught better. Most of us do better, but some of us don't. In the 1700s, English common law, as we talked about common law marriage, English common law decreed that a husband had the right to chastise his wife with a whip or a rattan. The rattan is like wicker used to make furniture, hence, you know, like a switch, no bigger than his thumb, in order to enforce domestic discipline. Since he was responsible for her misgivings, the law entrusted him with the power of restraining her. This came known as the law of thumb. In the United States in 1871, Fulghum versus the state of Alabama, I don't know how the hell Alabama actually took a right move in this, the court handed down a decision that ruled that privilege, ancient though it may be, to beat your wife with a stick, pull her hair, choke her, spit in her face, or kick her about the floor, or to inflict upon her other like indecencies, is not now acknowledged by our law. That was in 1871 in the state of Alabama. In 1910, the Supreme Court ruled that a wife had no cause for action against her husband for assault and battery because it would open the doors of the courts to accusations of all sorts of one spouse against the other and bring into public notice complaints for assault, slander, libel, etc. And as late as 1977, the California Penal Code read that a wife who charges her husband with criminal assault and battery must suffer more injuries than commonly needed for charges for assault and battery to be placed upon an individual.
He got to really, really beat her ass?
He got to really, really whip that ass in order for charges to be brought against him by his wife.
It's got to be unequivocal that he beat that
ass.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Which is definitely not the case today. That's for sure.
No. No, not at all. In the late 80s, actually, Vermont moved to recognize domestic violence and gave its local police officers the power to detain and or arrest people on the spot if they believed domestic violence was in the home. And that was like the first case study, to be honest with you, to move the agenda forward in the realm of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And, you know, I just hate that there's so many people. And, again, I do think, Lee, that you are on the right track. It's a cultural thing. And I do believe there's a huge difference because I am from the South originally, from North Carolina.
Where?
So I know for a fact that, you know, you are taught to push things under the rug and not to address. And not until I started writing this book did I become aware and find out through my research that my actual birth mother, before she passed away, she experienced domestic violence. And so that's when I realized, oh, you know what? This is about to end right here because I was not going to allow this cycle, you know, to continue, this generational, you know, torture to continue with my son. And so that was a part of the reason I decided to write the book because initially I was writing the book just as a healing. It wasn't for me to go, oh, I'm going to write a book and then I'm going to tell people about domestic violence. I was just writing just for myself, and I was just going to leave my journal for my son to try to explain to him, you know, why I put him in this terrible situation, you know, for so many years. But then it turned into this thing that we have today, which is this book and all these different programs that I provide, you know, to people to help them get out of that situation. But that's, I think it's a cultural thing. I think people are afraid of dealing with the real issue and holding people accountable. And you've got to hold people accountable or they're going to keep doing that same shit over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, now, hold on. You said you spoke to men also being abused.
So
what I did was in the research for the book, I thought it would be really important to make sure that people understand it's not just women getting abused, but there are a huge population of men. The only reason you don't hear too much about it is because they're afraid of the stigma of reporting, whatever the kind of abuse it is, whether it's physical, psychological, whatever, they're afraid, you know, to report that because it makes them seem less than a man or their pride or, you know, different reasons, or the police won't believe them or they may think they're the abuser in a situation. So I talk about what some of those stereotypes, what those things look like, but then I also encourage men to step out and to step out of that shame. And so during one of my book readings that I had last month, there was a group of men that came to the book reading, and I thought they were there just to support, you know, their wives that were there or girlfriends. Well, it turns out that they started sharing their stories of how they were actually abused. They were victims of domestic violence and that they never reported it, and they started explaining essentially what I was saying in the book, the different stereotypes of why they were not reporting these things. And I thought, this is so sad. This is crazy. Just because you're a man and you think no one's going to believe you and you're going to sit and suffer in silence, you know, and luckily for these people, they got out. But there's, like, men right now, I'm sure, maybe someone listening to this, you know, podcast, this radio podcast, they're dealing with this. And they're too ashamed or embarrassed, you know, to get out. And I just think that's sad. It breaks my heart. It really does, because our men, I don't care what nobody says, you know, men are equally as important, and just as there are the backbone, you know, I think, of a family. That's
Say that again.
I think, you know,
say that again.
I do. That's just me.
We important.
Are, you know, the head of the household. That's just me. I'm not saying women are less than, or, you know, they don't have an important role and they can't be the head of the household. That's just my point of view. That's all I'm saying.
You know,
I think it's important.
Ms. Gwen, I have a name for that. Well, they already had it one. It's called cockholding. But I call it the Norbit syndrome, where you're with a woman who has been generationally trained to be the head of household. Like, there's either been absent men or sickly men, negligent men. And the women, it's a matriarchal family. I'm not giving excuses. I'm just saying that I have seen these such families where out of 10 children, 7 are girls.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is the type of women that you see are, they're very strong women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very aggressive. Assertive, and what these men end up doing is falling prey to, like, some lure they have, like financial things, or an unlimited amount of time, or they're real gratuitous with gifts, just like men are when they have hurt you or when they're trying to apologize. They, instead of apologizing with gifts, they lure with gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is, instead of an abusive, I'm going to hurt you and then give you something, it's, here, I'm going to give you this and then hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you this, hurt you, give you this, hurt you. And it's very similar. It seems like the same cycle, but the lure, it's the lure of staying with a woman who has the power, a woman
mm-hmm.
who has power. And that's why I hate that men cannot acknowledge that abuse, because it's saying she had the power to alter my reality in a way that was negligent. And I that's what it is. They just won't say, hey, she had the money, and when she was mad, I couldn't eat.
Uh-huh.
Or mm-hmm. or she had the vagina, and if I didn't do what she said, she wouldn't give me none.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Abuse, no less.
That's what it is. I mean, that's financial and psychological abuse and sexual abuse.
And my favorite
is
mm-hmm. she blacked my eye because she found some girl's text in my phone. I've seen mm-hmm. that twice, and I was like. She went in your phone. She found just another woman's number, random. She didn't know. She didn't ask. she just came and blacked your eye. And I'm like, you need to go to the shelter. And he looked at me like, don't play with me.
You know what? Speaking of shelter, I'll tell you, you know, when I was, now keep in mind, I pay for everything, the house, the car, whatever. And so here's how the system, it works for you, but then it works against you at the same time. When the police came, after I called the police to come help me, he told the police that he didn't have any friends, no family, no one that he could go to. But because there's shelters in place for battered victims and families, to include their pets, that my son and I and the dog, we could go stay in a shelter, but he stay in the house. And I said, this is so I had to pick up my entire life, move to a shelter, and he gets to stay in the house that I'm paying for? Oh, hell to the no. Mm-mm. I was like, that, no. And that's where
Negatory. Things
really just went, yes, shit went real crazy after that, because I'm going, he gets to drive my car, he gets to live in the house and do nothing. Like, no.
Oh, he's doing something in your house, honey. He's bringing all them hoes off.
Right? Right? I mean, that's
why gotta be some more hoes, though?
Like, you said what now?
Why
gotta be more hoes?
Oh, yeah.
Why
wouldn't it be more? Here's the thing I'm gonna tell you. I don't judge people. The reason I don't judge the lady is because I don't have any connection to them. I judge him, which I shouldn't be judging him because you're not supposed to judge other people, but I held him accountable for his actions, not the other women, because he drew them into this situation. The only thing
that's true.
I can do is hold him accountable for that. And that's one thing that I tell people in the book is don't hate that woman because she ain't have nothing to do with this. That was him
that
brought her into this situation, or her if you're a guy, whatever. But, you know, he brought her into that situation, into our lives. And, I mean, but it was crazy. I mean, this chick, she would call, like, 14, 15 times a day, you know. And
Ms. Gwynn.
I'm like, what the? Huh, yes.
Ms. Gwynn, would you put the threat of another woman up there high with substance abuse or a threat of another individual entering the relationship up there with substance abuse as reasons why households fall into that violent state?
No. You know, my thing is self-worth, because you have to understand that if the person is seeking someone else outside of your relationship, that, again, that's not that woman. She's not the threat. The threat is that person, your partner. You have to really kind of segment and put that other person outside of that relationship, because if they put more value in trying to get with that third person, then they really aren't dedicated to or committed to the family vision, the family goals that you're supposed to be focusing on. And if that's the case, let their ass ride. Just let them be out.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have more self-worth and more self-respect for yourself and keep it moving.
Glenn, I need you to give your contact information. So
okay. We
can get you out of here.
And I also want to give some huge, you know, I have a promo going on right now, too, that's specifically for the listeners. So if you buy my book at GwendolynWilderAuthor.com, and, again, my name is spelled GwendolynWilder, Wilder, W-I-L-D-E-R, Author.com. Yeah, you have to buy it from my website. If you buy the book from my website, then you're going to get free classes, free PDFs. I have a ton of goodies that I created to go with the book. And then also you get a discount on all of the classes that I provide. So I provide classes for individuals and for businesses so that way they can create programs designed around domestic violence. And so all of those programs right now, you're going to get them for $97. Whereas normally, you know, they're about $2,000 each. And so I just want to make sure that people know if you order the book from the website, you get free classes, which is phenomenal, and then you get discounts on everything.
Given the website information, because, you know, it's very important for people to spell your name right.
Yes, it is. So it's GwendolynWilderAuthor.com, GwendolynWilderAuthor.com, all together.
Cool. All right. Rashi, any closing comments?
I just, the amount of information that's been transferred here today, it's phenomenal. Ms. Gwynn, I'm so glad you made it out on the other side. You just don't know what it means to see success stories in this instance. We hear a lot about who don't make it, who got mm-hmm. killed or who got hurt. We don't hear that much about who came out on the other side, because when they do, they're real quiet about it. There's something about once you make it out on the other side, not only are you quiet on that side, you're quiet on the other side when it's in the back in the rearview mirror. And I just want to thank you for championing this cause, because it's every day. Somebody, before we finish this conversation, some lady has been, you know, choked to death.
Right.
Every 9 seconds.
And it's so preventable with mm-hmm. proper communication and self-worth. And I'm glad that that's your focus. It's so powerful. And I'm glad. Listen, I'm on my way to tap my way off to your site and get my new read, because it's nobody's talking about it. It's the other taboo subject. You know,
and you know
nobody
what?
Wants to talk about.
That's what it's all about. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, I was able to come onto the show today. But that's what it's all about. I truly feel that God wants me to tell my story and put all my shit on Front Street. If it just saves one person or it helps one person, then, which I know that it has. I've had people tell me how their lives have changed already by reading this book. So I have met my life mission already. Everything else is just a bonus that happens with this thing. And as long as someone tells me that their life has changed in a positive way, or they learned some new information about domestic violence, then I'm like, cool, that's it. You know, I'm good. So, and I just continue to try to help the victims as much as I can. And that's why, you know, I help them if they want to, you know, get back into the workforce. And I give them the tools that they need to prepare for getting a job, or how to prepare for an interview, or how to dress, and how to start a business if you don't know how to start a business, you know. So I try to give them all that, all those resources out there. But thank you so much. Thank you for letting me come up here and share my passion. I truly, truly, I love you to death, Lee. Love you.
No. We love you, and I appreciate your time. Again, you know,
I don't
please,
love
folks.
You that much, Lee.
No, okay.
What?
It's all right. get online, support the young lady, buy her book, you know, definitely feel your passion. And I'm happy that you were able to overcome your pain. This is a very sensitive topic for a lot of people. Obviously, some of them will remain silent even after today. But hopefully somebody somewhere will be encouraged and inspired to step up and step out and get themselves together, because they are tired, too, of going through the situation that they're in. And for all of you all that are listening now, for all of you that will listen tomorrow or Monday or when you're driving to work, we get a lot of uptick traffic on Mondays and Tuesdays. Please note that it is our mission to always press the envelope, to be here with you and for you. And this is why we do this week in and week out. Gwen, thank you. I appreciate you again and your time. We'll talk later. Obviously, there's a follow-up conversation that needs to happen to this. You said a couple mm-hmm. of things about conflict resolution, so on and so forth, and that could very well play into some other things that we're looking at doing in the very near future on the show. So I'll reach out to you, baby. You be good, okay?
Sounds good.
Actually,
love it.
I need to put a bug in your ear, too, because I might be your way sooner rather than later. I might come down at the end of the month. Yeah, I think I'm gonna come down at the end of the month.
Awesome.
The very last weekend in April.
Mm-hmm.
See that? See this? But you can't say that, baby, because then I can't charge the IRS for the expense. So you can't say that. I will be staying at the Marriott. I will be staying at the Marriott, as I always do at the Marriott.
Oh, God.
Will not be staying with friends and or family. Damn, Gwen, you just fucked up my whole program. You know? Some people's going to be looking at my shit like, hold on.
That's just what family says.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there you go. You was just being nice. You was just being nice.
That's
Lord have mercy. Got me all auditors and all kinds. But anyhow, baby, we'll talk some more about that. And
okay.
That's what's up. You be good. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. Love you guys.
I love you too. Peace.
All right now.
Okay, Rashi. It's yours. What
Mr.
do you
Lee,
think? How you feel?
Mr. Lee, I have one assignment for you.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Please, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Find another greeting than baby.
Okay.
Find it.
Okay.
If it's a habit even of just calling people their name, you would be surprised how much more attention you get when you don't call a woman baby.
Okay.
Especially a woman older than you.
I respect that. I respect that.
Just think about it.
Okay.
I love this show. You know that? I love this
mm-hmm.
show. And I learn something every single time I engage. Thank you for that, brother.
You're welcome, sis. You are so welcome.
Have a good day, bro.
How did you? Okay. Peace. You all, thank you for joining. Right. Again, we will see you next week on the radio. Peace.